Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Keywords 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. I had to call Kevin today, and then I get his ringtone. I almost hung up.
I was waiting for you to call and listen to the ringtone. You don't like ringback tones in the first place, but this one you really didn't like. I put on John Williams, Olympic Fanfare. Thank you, John Williams. I sent him 99 cents. He's happy. I'm happy. You're happy.
I think you got ripped off. That's what I think. I think you got ripped off.
Not me. I'm happy with it.
Well, it is National Letter of Intent Day. 25 players in the fold. 5 early entries, so they were all set. And they'll be a part of spring practice, including Barrow and O'Connor and those guys. And then there's 20 signees. Torrence Brown, a linebacker from Alabama, who had verbally committed to Southern Mississippi, an outside linebacker, became the 20th guy of the class today. So they're ratcheting up the numbers and ratcheting up the depth. We now bring in Tim Owen from Blue White Illustrated. Tim, welcome back. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Good to be here, Steve. How are you?
Doing great, Tim. From a personal point of view, how exciting and exhausting is this time of the year for you?
A little bit of both, and then you add in the snowstorm out here, and it just makes everything all easy for us, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but it's a great time of year, you know. I mean, this is the lifeblood of Blue White Illustrated and publications like us. You know, it's all about recruiting, and this is the end of the cycle. And there's a lot of reasons for Penn State fans to be happy about this class. And you know, just the kids that stuck around from Bill O'Brien to the new names that James Franklin was able to bring in. You know, there's just a lot of excitement that's built around those individuals. And you know, as a fan, it's kind of that next wave of the guys you're going to see on Saturdays in Beaver Stadium. So it's an exciting time, but when you're working for a publication like Blue White Illustrated, it's busy too. No doubt about it. I mean, you're tracking down recruits, you know, all day, especially when you know signing day is only 2 days away, and then you're keeping an eye out for what surprises might be. You know, is there anyone going to sign the dotted line with Penn State that we don't know about? Is there someone who might be verbally committed now that signs elsewhere? So it's hectic, but yeah, it's exciting at the same time.
There was a way that Joe Paterno and his staff went about their business when it came to this, and Blue White Illustrated covered it. Then there was a way that Bill O'Brien and his staff went about this, which then you had to adjust to and then find out and figure out. What's been the adjustment to trying to work through this 3-week cycle with James Franklin and his staff that's a bit different from the previous two?
I think the big difference, I mean, isn't necessarily because of James Franklin or because of Bill O'Brien or Paterno. It's a lot has to do with the timing of James Franklin being here. You know, he got here, you know, right after January 11th, right after the quiet period was ending, and he hit the ground running, and he had a lot to do in a short amount of time. He had a lot of new recruits that he had to introduce himself to and talk into Penn State, and then he also had the recruits who were committed to Bill O'Brien, who he had to build that relationship with, and reassure them that, you know, just because O'Brien's not here in that previous coaching staff, then hey, it's still Penn State. You know, you're still able to go to the school that you originally committed to. So that was a little different because it was just so hectic. You know, there was 3 weeks for him to do it. He was all over the place, you know, from Tucson, Arizona to Philly, you know, just in a couple of days. So I think that might have been a little unique, just because, you know, Paterno was here forever. I don't need to remind you that. And then with O'Brien, you know, he kind of, by the time he came along, you know, the recruiting game was a whole different story right there because of the scandal that was going on. So this was just a little bit different because of the compactness of the time. You know, he was here for 3 weeks and was working steady and constant the entire time, you know, whether it was flipping kids from Vanderbilt to come up to Penn State, whether it was reassuring kids who were already committed to Penn State that this was the place he needed to be, or if he was going out to California and signing a four-star that, you know, wasn't committed to Vanderbilt or Penn State, you know, a brand-new prospect. So he was all over the place, and yeah, it was a few busy weeks there.
I don't need to remind you. Was that a little subtle dig at age for me there, Tim?
That's why I called
you.
Him.
I think that's all. I don't think anyone needs to be reminded of how long you were.
I was around him for 32 years, Tim. So I think, as you can tell, I'm laughing rather heartily at it. That was pretty good. I like that.
What was the birthday a couple weeks ago? 56?
Yeah, that's okay. Right. Just headed toward the cliff. Headed toward the cliff. But I remember, when you two get to be that age, right? Well, actually, when that happens, I'll be 86. All right, so Tim, let's now, in terms of the whirlwind of all of this, how difficult has it been able to keep track just of his travel in all of this?
That's a whole new story. I mean, like I said, last week he was, you know, in Tucson one day, and then, you know, he's back in Pittsburgh the day after that. You know, he's just all over the place, and it's almost just his mindset, his personality. He's just a goer. He just goes, and I think if he thinks he's sitting still, then someone else is bypassing him. So, you know, whether he's got to be on the phone or he's got to be in the airplane, you know, traveling cross country, he's going to do it. But to quantitatively measure how many miles he's flew over the past couple of weeks, I think that's up to his pilot. I don't think anybody else is really going to be able to monitor that, because he is. He lands in, you know, California in the morning. He's down in Arizona by the afternoon, and then he's back home in Pennsylvania by the evening. It's a travel schedule that, you know, Bill O'Brien and his staff did, but going back to the compactness of this, the 3 weeks that he's had to, you know, do all this traveling, it kind of multiplies it a little bit. It seems like he's been all over the world.
Well, and there's a part to that too. Remember, there are people that were actively recruited by Bill and his staff now for a couple of years, and had cultivated those relationships and had verbaled already. And James Franklin, there's many of them he didn't know personally to begin with, and he doesn't do anything unless he has a relationship with the young man and his family. So he wanted to go out and meet them first, and that's why this travel schedule has been so crazy, because of how compact.
Yeah, it was his first priority, was to get in those homes of the kids who had already committed to O'Brien and just reassure them that nothing's changing. There might be new coaches here, new coaching staff, new philosophies, but the foundation of what they committed to is still there. And I think that might be one of the more impressive parts about this whole class in general, and a lot of this credit goes to Bill O'Brien, is the majority of this class stayed together. They stayed strong through this whole coaching transition, which we all know for a couple of weeks was, you know, very, very interesting and going back and forth all different ways. And for those 18, 17 kids who committed to O'Brien and stuck through, I think that kind of goes to show how O'Brien recruited many of his commits, his recruits. You know, besides the quarterback, he never really sold himself to the recruits. He always put the university first, the town, the alumni network, the education. He always sold that first. So those kids that were committed to him, they were committed more so to the university. And once they saw Franklin came in and took over and realized that was a guy that they could work with and respect, they already knew that the university wasn't changing and that wasn't going anywhere. So I think that's kind of a compliment to O'Brien and the previous staff, with how they actually recruited these kids.
Right.
They weren't necessarily selling a person or an individual. It was more of the idea of Penn State, and I think that's why, it, even though Franklin had to travel all over the place, he was able to, you know, get those kids to keep their commitment to Penn State and not really look elsewhere.
I think one of the advantages of taking your own staff with you anywhere, and there are seven members of this staff that he brought with him from Vanderbilt, is that you have a lot of tentacles in place for 15 and 16 as a collective group. Are you seeing evidence of the transition into here, that that part of it is already kicked into high gear because of that?
Yeah, it seems like the first wave of 2015 offers are kind of going out right now. The last couple of days, they've been offering some new names in the junior class, that 2015 class, and there's even a couple guys from the 2016 class that have been getting offers as well, too. But I think they're starting to focus on some of the kids that they did have those previous relationships built with at Vanderbilt. And those are the first offers that you're kind of starting to see. And then they'll start going more regional here in the next couple of weeks, I'm sure, once signing day is done. And really, you know, comb the Pennsylvania region, the New Jersey region, you know, the Pennsylvania's core group of states. And that's when they'll start extending even more offers to maybe the newer names that this coaching staff isn't necessarily familiar with from the last year or two of recruiting. But to go off of that is, even if these are new names that they haven't necessarily built a relationship with, you go through these assistant coaches, and they all have some type of tie to the region, to this recruiting hotbed for Penn State. You know, you have guys from, you know, Altoona, you know, like you have from Brent Price from Altoona, you have right. guys from New Jersey, upstate New York, Maryland. You know, so it's all that core recruiting area for Penn State that, even if they don't have the relationships built up with some of these top recruits from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and so on, they have that network and that foundation that they should be able to build on that pretty quickly.
Tim, what kind of relationships are you sensing that they have with the high school coaches in Pennsylvania? That's going to be obviously a process that they will take care of quickly, but has that process already begun, or because it's so quick, it's hit and miss at the moment?
I think it's already begun, and I think a lot of it just goes back to, you know, what I was just saying about their yeah. ties to this area. You know, some of them have played college football with these coaches, you know, maybe even high school, or they
right.
recruited at those schools while they were at Vanderbilt or other places. And I think one of the big network connections that's going to help Penn State is the connection to the PSAC. You know, you have James Franklin, who's an East Stroudsburg grad, and I know a lot of your high school coaches across the state played for a PSAC school, whether it was East Stroudsburg or Bloomsburg, Shippensburg, Millersville. You know, for example, my high school coach back at Athens when I was in high school, he played at Bloomsburg, and he doesn't know Franklin personally, but he knew of him. So, and that just dates back to their Bloomsburg-East-Stroudsburg connection.
Right.
And I think you're going to see that a lot, especially in the state of Pennsylvania, you know, where just that network from his playing days is really going to help him, and it's going to come back around. And I think it's just that PSAT network in general, you know, they're Pennsylvania guys, and they want to keep their best players in within the state, you would have to think.
Right.
Especially if it's one of their own guys as the head coach.
Yeah,
that plays into it.
Right, when you're at Vanderbilt, you don't put a protractor down in Nashville and go, okay, we're going to recruit guys in a 350-mile radius. That's not how things work at Vanderbilt. It's just not how it goes.
No, there's not many East Stroudsburg grads down there either.
No, nah, I don't think so either. You just don't do that. It's a different kind of deal down there. Were there any decommits or commits that surprised you in this three-week process, that really kind of, oh, I'm really kind of surprised that either A, that individual committed, or B, wow, I'm really surprised that person decommitted?
Yeah, probably the biggest surprise would be that Saeed Blacknell, who decommitted from Rutgers after being committed to Rutgers for almost a year, and James Franklin got him to flip to Penn State. Just last week, actually, was when he made the announcement. He visited the week before that. Saeed is a top 250 player in the country at any position, top 10 receiver. And, you know, despite the fact that Penn State already has three top quality receivers, this was just a can't-miss guy. And James Franklin recruited Saeed Blacknell at Vanderbilt, but Saeed was always kind of a kid who wanted who grew up in Manalapan, New Jersey, you know, just a couple of miles from Rutgers campus. So he always thought, you know, staying close to home was going to be his thing, his MO. So when Franklin recruited him at Vanderbilt, you know, Nashville too far away, that's a little bit out of his scope. So once Franklin came up to Penn State, he gets on the phone with Blacknell. He's up on campus for a visit, and then a week later, you know, he's a Nittany Lion. So that kind of surprised me just because he had been committed to Rutgers for so long and seemed to be so solid considering the, you know, being so close geographically to Rutgers and, you know, talking about wanting to stay home, you know, being able to have his parents come see him. Rutgers just seemed like the perfect fit for him. And then Franklin comes out to Penn State and changes things. So I think that's probably the biggest surprise you go through the list.
One final question for you, Tim, and I'll let you go. Tim Owen for Bluewood Illustrated joining us. And the question is this. Social media now plays such an important role in anything, from a recruit announcing or the use of Twitter with a coach just saying, you know, quote, we just got better, just something simple like that, to, I mean, even in news reporting. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Twitter comes out, first thing, people see a tweet. Is the NCAA realistic right now? Are they in 2014, the NCAA, in their rules about the role of social media in recruiting?
I can't believe so. I don't know the rules well enough in and out to say for sure. But from the, you know, just an outside perspective, no, I don't think so, because there's basically no limitation as far as how a coach can contact a commit or a recruit through the social media. There's very little regulation on that, and they essentially, if I understand it correctly, they group that in the same social media in the same type of rules as text messaging. They kind of consider it the same thing, and okay, there's not many limitations on that. So these guys can go ahead and follow a recruit on Twitter and then send them a direct message, a personal message, you know, that nobody else can see. And they can do that as many times as they want because there's no one really regulating that. And, you know, I don't know if the NCAA has that ability to regulate it because it's so private and, you know, it is a direct message that only those two can see. But it's not just a Penn State thing. It is a little new for Penn State because all of these assistant coaches have Twitter. Herb Hand, I mean, that's one of the best – you know, one of the best Twitter followers on the staff.
Right.
You know, they all have it. They all are very active on it. But that's not necessarily new across the board. It might be new at Penn State a little bit, you know, especially dating back to Paterno staff. O'Brien's staff used it a little bit, and, you know, some more than others. But I think it's a little new now because everybody has it on the staff, and they're very active on it. But really, I think it's kind of keeping up with the Joneses because everybody else, as far as other coaching staffs and other universities, you know, they're using the same tool. So it's kind of, you have to do it, you have to use it because everybody else is. That type of thing.
Well, I just received a tweet and a text that says the segment's over. All right. So, and this keeping up with the Joneses thing, I can assure you in no uncertain term, the Joneses have been trying very hard to keep up with everybody else.
Tim, I thought you might like that.
I mean, we've been trying as a family for a long time. I mean, my parents are like, oh, yeah, everybody's trying to keep up with us, really?
Our comedy just went up greatly on the show with the last 20 minutes with Tim.
I mean, Tim just jumped in, man. Hey, Tim, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, as always, my friend. You notice they don't have a saying where it says keep up with the hers.
You know, I was thinking keep up with the Joneses. I'm like, wait, keep up with you? I'm just happy that you have a phone and know how to use it.
Well, I used it today and called you, and then all of a sudden got that disgusting ringtone.
That's your fault.
Well, my fault. You're the one that put it on there. Obviously, it'll be the last phone call I make to you.
Woohoo! Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. That was supposed to be in my head.
We'll just surprise you on the other segments. Okay, we'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WK, okay?
Attention residents of Central PA. The sub-zero temperatures are expected for at least another week. But Sun Mary Motors is about to heat things up. Sunbury Motors Kia is blasting through this cold winter weather.
Check out these hot deals.
22 of the snow-busted 2014 Sereno all-wheel drive midsize SUVs starting at $23,999. With up to $4,500 off and 0% APR financing available for up to 60 months. How about the all-new redesigned 2014 Kia Soul? 10 to choose from starting at $14,995. Or the 2014 Sportage LX, only $21,965. And every new Kia comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia helps you blast through the cold with these hot deals. Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip at Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com. All applicable factory rebates apply. Tax and tax extra must qualify. Specialty incentives apply. 0% financing through KMF. Full effect final price.
All right, to the bottom of the hour we go and news. We'd like to welcome everyone to your Olympic Free Zone.
For at least the next half hour, anyway.
How many people have walked up to you and said how excited they are about the Olympics?
One, two, three. I don't know. I'm going to have to count. There's been quite a few.
You're lying.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I have a pretty good feeling.
I'm going to say 72.
Sure.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We will take the show tomorrow to East Lansing, Michigan. Penn State and Michigan State tomorrow night at the Breslin Center at 9 o'clock. On tomorrow's show from East Lansing, believe me, while we've been concentrating extensively on Penn State football recruiting today with James Franklin, Tim Owen of Blue White Illustrated, Greg Pickle of Fight on State, and in a few moments, Tom Van Herren from ESPN.com on the Big Ten. We have not in any way forgotten about Bucknell and what they're doing. Joe Susan has a program on the march, and we're going to talk about his recruiting tomorrow when we have him at 3:35. Also, we're going to have, Kevin says he's producing Olympic moments for each of our shows over a 16-day span.
Well, I didn't say Olympic moments. I said Olympic fun facts. There's a difference.
Oh, good. Here's my fun fact about the Olympics. You know the best part of it?
When it's over.
Is seeing Sochi get smaller in your rearview mirror as you drive. All right. Let's bring in Tom Van Herren now from ESPN.com to talk about the Big Ten and recruiting. Tom, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I looked at the rankings this morning on ESPNU as I was sitting at Lash, and I found it amazing how it just seemed to fall into the place where you thought everybody would fall just if you were to pick up darts on a January morning. Ohio State 1, Michigan 2, Penn State 3, Wisconsin, all the way to, I believe, was Purdue being last. There's nothing shocking there, is there?
Not really. There's been a few things that have been shocking in between there and with the individual teams and coaching changes and all that. But, yeah, everything shook out how you would imagine it to end up. And it's still been an interesting signing day. We still have a few things happening right now. One of the top prospects, Malik McDowell, committed to Michigan State today, but he's yet to sign in his letter of intent. And his parents are upset he picked the Spartans, and so we still have drama here, but yeah, everything is kind of in place as you would imagine.
He picked the Spartans over whom?
Oh, well, he had a top four of Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and Florida State.
Okay.
So the big deal with them was the parents wanted him to get out of state. They didn't want him to go to Michigan State. He committed today at his school at a press conference, and they're trying to rehash it now after the fact. So
and they have to sign. Yeah, and they have to sign it, so.
Right, yeah, that's the thing. They need the parents on board.
Yeah, they do. All right, so what made Ohio State the top class in the Big Ten on paper and one of the top ten nationally?
Well, Urban Meyer, he's done such a good job everywhere that he goes with recruiting, and that hasn't changed at Ohio State. And he went into a few different areas and got some of the top prospects, the top commit that we have, the number one linebacker, Raekwon McMillan. He went down in Georgia and battled some of the SEC teams and got Raekwon to come up to Ohio and commit to Ohio State. He's a five-star. That was a huge get for them. And he also landed another ESPN 300 guy, wide receiver Johnny Dixon from Florida. They went in Detroit, went into Michigan territory in Detroit and got Damon Webb, one of the top corners in the country. So from top to bottom, this is just a really, really good class for Ohio State. It's going to fill a lot of needs, but it's going to fill it with really, really good prospects, some guys that could be immediate impact type players for them. So it's a lot of what you would expect Urban Meyer to do, but he's been able to do it at Ohio State under different circumstances, so it's been pretty impressive.
A lot of people felt this was an important class for Brady Hoke. How well did he do in terms of needs addressed?
He did very well. They were limited with scholarships. They only ended up with 16 in this class, and everybody kind of looked at that and said, what happened? Well, that was all that they had with the 85 total limit that they have to stay under.
Right.
They did get Jabril Peppers, the number two ranked prospect in the country, to sign his letter of intent. There was a little bit of intrigue there as well. It looked like he might waver on signing and wait, but he decided to go ahead and sign with Michigan. So they, again, Michigan filled a lot of needs. They got a lot of good prospects that they targeted early on, and they filled their class early on. I believe they haven't landed a commitment in the 2014 class since August.
Wow.
But yeah, and that's a pretty significant stat, because they did miss on a few prospects, but for the most part, their class was already filled by then. So, again, Brady Hoke did what he did, and Greg Madison went out on the recruiting trail and scooped up a bunch of good players.
Then Penn State's third on the ESPN board. James Franklin, Bill O'Brien started this class. James Franklin finished it. And what impact did James Franklin have in terms of how he put this class together in the end to put them in the spot they're in?
Well, it was a big impact, and a lot of the kids that commit to Penn State because of how Penn State has been built and the tradition behind it. A lot of them committed because it's Penn State, and that was significant in itself, that you didn't see a lot of deflections when James Franklin came in. And I think a lot of the prospects that I talked to when he was hired that were committed, they were excited to see what he was going to do. They knew what he did at Vanderbilt, and they were excited to see what he could do at a place like Penn State. And then he came in, and he said he was going to hit the ground running, and he definitely did that. He went out and right away tried to get every recruit that he could. I know his coaches worked tirelessly trying to get just in the conversation with some kids. They got Saeed Blacknall, a wide receiver, who was committed to Rutgers. He's an ESPN 300 prospect, which means he's in the top 300 ranking-wise. They got him to flip. And so now you're looking at a class with not only filling a lot of needs, but you have some top prospects in here, some guys that I think, again, for Penn State could potentially see some early playing time.
You do this on a regular basis. Based on how things have played out around here, which we all know too well, how surprised are you by how the recruiting has played out here the last couple of years, and how beyond competitive they've been on the field? They haven't just been competitive, they've won big games.
Yeah, it's been a little bit surprising. I would be lying if I didn't say I was surprised somewhat because of the sanctions and because of how everything played out, and when Bill O'Brien was there, what he was dealt with. But I think the main factor for this, there's two things to it. Like I said, Penn State is a place where kids, they see it as a program, and they're not committing to a coach. They commit to the program, and I think that's a big part of it. There aren't that many schools like a Penn State or a Notre Dame. They're in that conversation too, where a kid commits to that program, and I think that was a part of it. But I think the Penn State, the administration, they hired the right coaches. With Bill O'Brien, that was the right hire at the time, and now with James Franklin, I think this is going to be the right guy. Those guys know what they want. They're good talent evaluators, and that's a huge part of recruiting that doesn't really get talked about that much, is evaluating the right prospects, not just going out and getting every five-star or trying to get every four-star kid. It's getting the right kid for your program and the kind of kid that can really help you win games. So I think those are the main factors that have kind of kept this all together. And really now everything seems to be on an uphill climb. It seems the momentum is in Penn State's favor right now.
Any sleeper classes you see here? We've talked about the top three. Any sleeper classes where you sit back and say, you know what? Program did pretty well for itself.
Yeah, I really like Northwestern, what they did. This was one of Pat Fitzgerald's best classes that he signed. We have them ranked number 38 overall in the class rankings, but they got some really good prospects in this class. An in-state corner named Parker Westfall, who a lot of Big Ten teams were after. They got an ESPN 300 tight end out of New Jersey, Garrett Dickerson. I think he's going to be fantastic for them. But the main prospect, the main piece that I really like and a lot of people aren't talking about is quarterback Clayton Thorson. He's out of Illinois, so he's an in-state kid. We have him in the ESPN 300, so this might sound a little ridiculous, but I think he's under the radar a little bit. I don't think a lot of people talk about him, and I think he has the potential to boost that offense and really get them going. So this class for them, they have to be very excited for what they've done.
Maryland and Rutgers joined the mix. How well in the end did they do? And this will be tricky for you. If their class were in the American, Rutgers, or the ACC with Maryland, would they be ranked higher or lower?
Well, Rutgers had a really, really tough time. They lost a lot of commitments. There was a lot of decommitments, and it was a steady flow of prospects that were leaving. And at one point, it just got a little bit ridiculous. It seemed like every day there was a new decommitment for Rutgers. And as I mentioned, Penn State landed Saeed Blacknall, the wide receiver who used to be committed to Rutgers. And this class now on signing day, they recovered. They have 27 commitments, but it's a completely different class than what they started with. That's the interesting part about this. I think they bounced back and they did okay. Their class is probably one of the lower ranked. But that's not to say that they don't have some good prospects. They lost quarterback Tyler Wiegers to Iowa. Right. He flipped his commitment. And then they picked up a guy who I've been watching out in Michigan for quite some time now, Giovanni Rossigno. He backed up Shane Morris, who was in the 2013 class and signed with Michigan. He was his backup last year, so he didn't get a lot of film on him for his junior season. Rutgers landed a commitment from him, and I think he's going to be a guy that will eventually be an outstanding quarterback for them. But both classes, you know, it's tough to say. I don't like to talk too negative about about any class. But I would, if I had to rank them out, yeah, they would probably be some of the lower-ranked classes.
Yeah, you had Maryland, I think, 9, and I think Rutgers, I want to say it was 11 or 12, something like that, because I think Purdue, maybe 11, because I think Minnesota, yeah, Purdue, and Illinois were all behind them in terms of your rank or your ESPN's rankings. Michigan State, did they capitalize on the Rose Bowl?
You know what, that's a great question, and I think they will. I think they did a little bit in the 2014 class. There was some positive vibes. The coaches said that, you know, they did hear from some kids that they normally wouldn't be in the conversation with. But I think the biggest impact is probably going to be in the future, and they're already seeing it. In the 2015 class, I think that class is probably going to see a big jump in not only rankings, but the number of kids that are going to be interested in Michigan State. I think that's where they're really going to see the benefit. They already have Keonta Stallworth, an offensive lineman committed. He's an in-state kid. He's an ESPN junior 300 guy, which means he's in the top 300 for the 2015 class. I think that's where they're going to reap the benefits from that Rose Bowl and the Big Ten championship game. Beating Ohio State on that big of a stage, that's a big deal for Midwest kids.
And I'll let one more, and then I'll let you go. And that deals with 15 and 16. I'm talking to somebody who knows all too well that this part never sleeps. Who's off to a good start 15-16 and who's off to a slow start 15-16?
Well, different programs operate differently. Some coaches have different mentalities when it comes to the underclassmen and sending out offers, trying to get commitments. And Michigan actually got out to a really good start for the 2015 class. They had the number 2 ranked prospect George Campbell committed, and then they had the number 17 ranked prospect Damian Harris committed as well. We have him as the number 1 running back in the 2015 class, and both of those guys ended up decommitting. That was a huge blow to Michigan because they were at 6 commitments already in what was going to be a smaller class again, with 3 guys in the top 300 of those rankings, and now they're back to 1 with Sean Crawford. He's in the top 300, but that was a big blow to Michigan because you lose out on the number 2 prospect with George Campbell. He's going to start looking around now, and that kind of sends a message to some of the other top kids. Why did he decommit? What happened? What did he see? What did he not like? So it can kind of have a reverse effect on some of the prospects. But you know it's going to play out probably similar to how it is now. Ohio State's been sending out a lot of offers, and they are usually the opposite of what Michigan is. They'll close late rather than closing early. But they're off to a great start as well. They have two ESPN Junior 300 commits. So the 2015 class probably going to play out again very similarly to how it did in 2014.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the insight. Very, very much. I think you gave the fans a lot to think about.
I appreciate it. Have me back anytime. I'll talk to you soon.
That's Tom Van Herren from ESPN.com on Big Ten recruiting. A couple quick notes. Fax is the way it goes these days. You are allowed, by the way, to scan and email. But not a lot of people have scanners. And actually not a lot of schools have scanners. That's why the fax machine is the primary way of doing it. You have to have, when you hear about the McDowell kid at a press conference committing to Michigan State, and you hear about the parents, you have to have one parent sign the letter. Not both, but one.
You talked about that the other day, and I'm still amazed that you can't get on the same page. Wow. I mean, the same page as your parents and going to a school.
You have, you know, the odd thing is, if you're under the age of 21, you have to have one parent
right
sign. Now, the odd thing is that at the age of 18, you can enter the military. At the age of 18, you can vote. At the age of 18, if you go in the hospital and they need to do a surgical procedure, you have to sign it. Your parents can't.
You commit a crime, you're considered an adult.
Right. But when it comes to this, if you're under 21... you have to have a parent, one of them, sign a letter of intent. McDowell didn't have either parent sign the letter of intent. But the father supposedly is a little softer on this than mom. Here's the reason why. Evidently, he went to his official visit, and evidently they were kidding around with him about not having to go to class. She didn't like that. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. With Tim Owen of Blue White Illustrated, Greg Pickle of Fight on State, James Franklin, and Tom Van Herren from ESPN.com, all the recruiting from stem to stern. Tomorrow, Joe Susan of Bucknell will talk about his recruiting, which includes, by the way, a kicker, which is an important part because Joe talks often about the importance of special teams have gone in that direction. So we'll talk with Joe Susan tomorrow at 3:35 about Bucknell's recruiting. So it, and tomorrow's show, by the way, will be from East Lansing. Game tomorrow night with Michigan State. Adrian Payne, I think, is going to play tomorrow night, but Brandon Dawson is out. Or Michigan State broke his hand.
Are you going to catch a red eye?
What, coming back? Yeah.
No, going out.
Oh, I don't know. They moved the flight from 3:30 to 6. This flight thing got moved from 6 to 7, so...
And it's definitely a red-eye coming back. I knew that.
Yeah.
But it's not a long flight from there. It's not a long flight. It's
just got to hop over a lake.
Yeah. I thought Tony made an interesting point on Facebook about narrowing down to one sport. I agree with him completely about that. You know, Joe Paterno, of course, people didn't know about, you know, who was actually recruited really until they started playing. But you know what? It's 2014 now, and let me tell you what James Franklin did today. All he did today was, instead of blowing up the players out of proportion, that's not what he did. What he did was he celebrated the fact that they chose Penn State and that they put their trust in him and the trust in his staff. That's all he celebrated today. There was no talk about what you're going to do here or anything like that. It was all about thank you for putting your trust in us.
And tonight's all about introducing them to the rest of the Penn State faithful.
Right, and that's just about energizing the fan base so they know who was brought here. But that's what it's about. It was not about blowing up anything out of proportion. It was more of thank you for putting your trust in us, and we're celebrating the fact that you're going to come here and be a part of the Penn State family. That's all it was. It was well done.